current slide. We good? GU, this is the genital urinary system, and let's just go through this. This is not quite as long as the other. We'll still get out of here on time, I hope. I'll do the next lecture too, and if we have to, we'll tag the last few pages of this on in lecture, but you still have it available to you to study with between now and then. And you see our little fellow, he says, to pee or not to pee. So this is secretion and excretion away through the renal system. Enuresis is bedwetting. UTIs are very common in children. Untreated UTIs lead to kidney damage. Their organs are present but immature first. The kidney is very large, related to the size of the abdomen, so it's not very well protected by the posterior rib cage, anterior as well. The urethra is shorter and has a physical proximity to the rectum, which causes them to have more opportunity for invasive organisms, and y'all know that's your E. coli. The glomerular, the GFR, is slower in infants and toddlers, which is decreases their ability to concentrate the urine, which leads to dehydration because they're putting out very large volumes of fluid to get rid of the waste that they have. The newborn bladder capacity is about 30 milliliters. It reaches adult capacity of 270 milliliters by 1 year of age. And I honestly have to tell you that I thought the adult capacity was much higher than that. Output, you already know that. We're going to be looking at that. The infant typically, like that's the amounts, the 1 to 2 milliliters per kilogram. The infant is typically has 9 wet diapers a day. We have a question? Hey, Ms. Snell, are you with me? We asked them in 203 if they can turn their mic down a little. I wonder if they're thinking the same thing about us.
You have to walk across over there. If you walk over there and motion them down, you want me to go do it? Do you want me to go do it?
I feel like I'm just hollering. So, okay. So, let's see. An infant typically has 9 wet diapers a day. By the time they're 3 years old, they can have as little as 3 voids a day, okay? But it's typically 8. And that's an adult pattern. So a healthy voiding pattern, though, is every 2 hours, y'all. Because you think about it, bacteria, if it has the opportunity to grow, is going to do so. And so we want to practice keeping track of how often we're going to the bathroom. And if it's been a long period of time, just make yourself go ahead and go. And we have to teach this to children because it doesn't come naturally. The reproductive organs are present at birth, but they are very immature. Puberty is where you're going to see the reproductive organ concerns arise, okay? Bubble baths are not a good idea. The soap decreases the surface tension of water, which allows the migration of organisms into the urethra. So, of course, we're going to do the health history, the chief complaint, HBI, the cold spot, just like we talk about in every disease process. In this, you're going to look at a maternal history, if they're little bitty, what kind of medications or home treatments they have. Can you hear me over there? Are we okay? Okay. We need to ask about their habits, age of successful toilet training. And most of the time that happens right about 2 years old. Some kids are really easy and some kids are very difficult. Age of success of the toilet training we need to cover, toilet habits. Do they go alone or does mom go in there with them? And are they having accidents? The history of present illness, we're going to ask about any kind of burning or changing in the pattern. If it is foul smelling, if they're complaining of any kind of abdominal pain, and teenage girls are going to come and complain of low back pain, and is there blood in the urine? Flank pain, of course, is indicating that there's a problem with the kidney. Are they having any kind of poor growth? You're not going to see this with a typical UTI, but with a GU disorder, you will see that. Have they had a recent fever, a strep infection, or any kind of abdominal trauma? Y'all, strep is not that bad of a germ when it's in your throat. You have the bad sore throat. It tells you that you're sick, right? So you immediately know that you have strep throat. You're given antibiotics and it's gone, right? But strep loves a couple of different things. One is the heart. Strep loves the heart valves, okay? And it gets on there. Have you ever seen the ship when the water level, like the ship is not very heavy, so it sits high in the water and you can see barnacles all over the ship? That's what it creates on your heart valves. It causes damage in the kidneys as well. So we always want to be right on top of it if we suspect a strep infection and treat it. An overview, of course, inspection, observation, percussion, palpation. In the worst case scenarios, they'll be pale, lethargic, have rapid respirations and confusion. You think about the toxins that build up when the kidneys are not working right, right? The kidneys, how to tap those, y'all been taught that, right? It is truly a little tap, tap. And how to percuss, palpate the abdomen and the adnexa. You know, your adnexa is down here where your ovaries are. In the males, we need to palpate the scrotum. Undescended testes is very common. There can also be masses. Testicular cancer is common in the late teens, early 20 years. Potential concerns are fluid overload, alterations in nutrition, alterations in elimination. We're going to assess their typical voiding patterns and the child's ability to empty their bladder. And we do have to avoid constipation. Constipation and UTIs go hand in hand. How do we assess whether or not they emptied their bladder? The only way is to do a bladder scan. We can teach bladder stretching exercises and then teach front to back wiping and no bubble baths. Medications, just check, there's your list. Let's move on to the next. Hypospadias or epispadias. Hypo, this is, of course, is in males, and it's a urethral defect. The hypo is on the ventral surface, and epispadias is on the dorsal surface. Think baby shark. The dorsal fin is what's on the shark that we see in the Jaws movie. So the dorsal is going to be coming to the top. Epi is going to the bottom. Hypo is going to the bottom. The ventral is the bottom. Inspect the penis for the placement of the urethra. If it's too high, too low, or if it's too small. Ask the mom, once they're potty trained, if she's witnessed the flow and if it's a good flow and stream, how long does it take to pee? It does require surgical repair. Left undiagnosed and untreated, it may cause erectile dysfunction. And page 52, you see the double diapering procedure after surgery. It's not on your test, so don't worry. Obstructive uropathy. It can be one or both ureters involved. It is partial or complete. It leads to dilation of the affected kidney, which is called hydronephrosis, which we'll talk about a little bit more in a minute. The complications of this are recurrent UTI, renal insufficiency, progressive damage to the point of a renal failure, which of course leads to a kidney transplant. The history includes recurrent UTIs, incontinence, foul urine, fever, flank pain, and abdominal pain. This is classic urinary symptoms of frequency, urgency, dysuria, hematuria, and low back pain. That is with any disorder that we're going to talk about. Those are the classic symptoms, okay? So we'll try not to just repeat it over and over. So on the obstructive urinary physical, we'll look at their ears. That sounds funny, doesn't it? You think I made a mistake? No, we actually do because the ears form at the same time. So if you have an ear abnormality or anomaly, that's going to trigger you to start thinking kidney problem, okay? We're going to monitor their blood pressure because, again, the kidneys help regulate blood pressure. If they do have an obstruction, it is the surgical, not emergency, but it requires it. Post-op, we're going to, of course, be monitoring INO. The amount, appearance, and the smell. We're going to encourage fluids and administer analgesics, and we'll do some parental teaching. On hydronephrosis, this is just a swollen up, dilated kidney, and it comes from being blocked. So it is usually congenital, it is obstructive, it's secondary to reflux. This is damage from urine that comes back up from the bladder into the kidneys and causes infection and damage and blockage, which prevents it from doing its normal job. We're going to assess for symptoms of a UTI. And in infants, remember, they can't tell you that something's bothering. So what we're going to see in them is fever, vomiting, poor feeding, and irritability. We're going to talk about the maternal history if they're very young. Was there too much or too little amniotic fluid? Did they have the test that showed an elevated alpha-fetoprotein level? The tests for this are the VCUG and a renal ultrasound. Of course, we're going to monitor INO and hydration status. And we teach perineal hygiene because UTI is where this starts. So if we can improve that, we will decrease the chances of this occurring. VUR, this is the reflux. Typically, it is congenital in 30 to 50% of all children that have a UTI. It is because of this VUR, or they will have the VUR, backflow the urine to the kidneys, and it occurs during voiding. So as they void and the bladder muscle itself, because the bladder is a muscle, as that muscle contracts, it not only sends the urine out, but it sends the urine backwards, okay? If the urine is infected, it infects the kidneys. Refluxing causes increased pressure in the kidneys, which causes scarring, and scarring never returns to its normal function. So it leads to hypertension later in life. Symptoms of this are fever, dysuria, frequency, urgency, and nocturia, hematuria, low back pain, abdominal pain, flank pain. So basically all of the above, but think nighttime symptoms as well as blood. To continue this, the test for this is also VCUG. The treatment is antibiotics, which would be used prophylactically. So they would stay on an antibiotic every day. We teach the hygiene. Palpate for an abdominal mass or kidney is what you're looking for there. And they do say abdominal, so you would think that would be more posteriorly. They suggest checking blood pressure. It does require surgical correction. And 24 to 48 hours after surgery, they're going to be on IV fluids, which is usually 1.5 times maintenance, to increase the urine volume. And what else? We also want to keep it very dilute, right? We will keep them on the antibiotics for as much as 2 months after surgery. So in UTI, the bacteria sends, just like we talked about, sexually active females will also develop germs in the urethra because of force from on the urethra during sex. The UTI presents differently in infants. Of course, we talked about that. Children, they will complain of dysuria, frequency, hesitancy, urgency, and or pain. You know that it's E. coli that typically causes it. Stasis allows the bacteria to grow. So, you know, we want them peeing every 2 hours. Concentration does the same thing. So, you know, if you're not drinking enough water, urine gets very concentrated, which provides the perfect background for bacteria to live in. You do need acidic urine. So, you know, we always talk about cranberry juice, but there's a lot of ways to increase the acidity in your diet. Untreated infections can lead to pyelonephritis. I love my little Sesame Street character there. So the severity of a UTI varies. Typically, it responds very well to oral antibiotics, and they are called uncomplicated urinary tract infections. They're detected using a urine dip, okay? So you will just have the stick, they pee on the stick. You can compare the stick to the bottle that the sticks came out of and read the colors off the stick. You can also send it through a little analyzer. In worst cases, well, if it's positive for leukocytes, that's an indication of an infection. If it's positive for nitrites, there's no question it's an infection, and that infection has been there 2 or 3 days. Why is that, y'all? Every living organism has an input and an output, an intake and output. So bacteria's poop is nitrites, okay? So once bacteria has been there for a while, nitrites show up, you know, because it's their output. So if you measure nitrites on a urine dip, you got a bad urinary tract infection that's been there a couple of days. The urine culture is definitive, but we're not going to wait on the culture to come back to start treating if we're suspicious of it. We will repeat after treatment if it is positive, okay? But we're going to go ahead and start treating as soon as we suspect that that's what's going on. The history is everything we've already talked about, and then that lethargic infant that's just not acting right. And sometimes the mom will notice that the diaper just smells really horrible. Ask about any kind of previous UTIs, because once you've had one, you're kind of susceptible to just keep having them. You need to, and it's usually related to their habits, like bubble baths and wiping, you know,
back to front, you know. We will do a clean catch. There's pictures in your book of how to bag a baby and all that kind of good stuff. Additional tests would be the renal ultrasound, the BCUG, and a bladder scan for residual volume. If they're less than 3 months old and have a UTI, they may be on the verge of sepsis. We're going to flush them with fluids, give antipyretics. We can use a heating pad. See your chart there for a few more details. Enuresis or nocturnal enuresis. This is just incontinence of the urine past the point that they were toilet trained. It usually resolves by age 6. Occasionally they have daytime accidents, and these are not a cause for concern. This is your distracted child who has put it off to the very last minute. I can tell you, my son that had this, he would be so embarrassed, but he would be about 5 years old, I think, and playing outside, and all of a sudden he would just like jump up and scream, TJ, and he would run as fast as he could to the bathroom. And he always had a little wet spot on the front of his shorts because, you know, he was just waiting to the last second. That's not the same thing, okay? Nocturnia may persist into adolescence, and in very rare cases, you can see it persist into adulthood. Look for diabetes mellitus or insipidus, either one. Constipation and emotional distress also can trigger some problems here. There's also the dysfunctional incontinence, which is, they call it giggle incontinence in kids. And that's just that they can't quite hold their urine when there's some stress. Enuresis, yes, ma'am. Sickle cell anemia, okay. So enuresis and nocturnal enuresis, nocturnal may be related to high fluid intake near bedtime. Sometimes it is OSA, obstructive sleep apnea, or sex abuse. Ask, is there a family history of enuresis? That makes them more prone to it. Is there any kind of family stress going on? That frequently triggers that. See if they have chronic constipation. See if there are excessive demands on their potty training skills. Of course, consider their developmental age. If they're 2 years old and wet in the bed, we're not surprised. Increase their fluids earlier in the daytime and limit them near bedtime. Teach the parents that most of the time this is completely unintentional. The best way to get past this is to create a reward system. Be very matter of fact about it and let the child participate in cleaning up the mess. The tools, there is an enuresis alarm, and that works by the first little drop or two that hits this pad that's on the bed. They will, the alarm goes off, it wakes them up. They, what do we have here? Mm-hmm. Okay, good deal. All right, so that alarm eventually never goes off. Okay, so it's retrain them because it'll wake them up. The meds there are oxybutynin, desmopressin, or DDAVP. Nephrotic syndrome, it is related to increased permeability of the kidneys. Y'all think about a strainer. You know, like if you boil spaghetti noodles and you want to get the juice, the water out of the spaghetti, you pour it through a strainer, right? Increased permeability means that the holes are too big and the spaghetti's going to run right on through, okay? So you think about the bigger molecules, proteins, and all that are slipping through, and we don't want that. It's mostly albumin. When you have protein in your urine, the urine's going to look really frothy, okay, bubbly. The causes are congenital, idiopathic, secondary. I put that on the picture of strain. Congenital is a potential cause. Oh, skip that one. This is the one, the congenital kind is rare. It's related to being Finnish, you know, in genetics. That is a very poor prognosis. Secondary is SLE and all that kind of good stuff. So focus on the idiopathic. It's called MCNS, minimal change nephrotic syndrome. So that means minimal change. So not that bad of a deal, right? It onsets by age 6. It'll cause anemia, infection, poor growth, peritonitis, thrombosis, and renal failure. The large basement membrane allows that albumin and protein to escape. There is an osmotic shift that takes place because of this, which causes the kidneys, they realize when something's going on, We all have feedback loop mechanisms in every last organ that we have. So it says, give me more or send me less, okay? So as this change occurs, the kidneys start conserving sodium. And what happens? Water follows salt, right? So it's going to conserve sodium. So you're going to have edema. And you have increased liver production of lipoproteins, which leads to hyperlipidemia, which in these cases is very severe. Secondary infections are at secondary to pneumococcal pneumonia, sepsis, spontaneous peritonitis, and ARF. The treatment is steroids, IV albumin, of course, to replace the albumin that they lost, and diuretics to get rid of the edema. The nurse would, of course, weigh the patient, check blood pressures, give diuretics, and prevent infection. There's your list of labs, but it kind of follows along what we've already talked about. So acute post-streptococcal glomerulonephritis, the kidney injury from your immune processes that harm the glomeruli. It is usually caused by inflammation. It affects both kidneys and usually follows an upper respiratory or throat infection, or in some cases a skin infection. It occurs at age 3 to 7. Sorry, y'all, I'm trying to hurry. The complications are uremia and renal failure. The treatment is to maintain the fluid volume, manage blood pressure, antibiotics if an infection is continuing on. So we expect it to happen after the infection is already cleared up. But if you suspect that the infection is not completely gone, you want to go ahead and do antibiotics as well. Of course, we're going to look at the history of any kind of decreased urine output with a recent strep infection in a child that's greater than 3 in male. Assess blood pressure, edema, any kind of increased work of breathing, and their urine, it says in the book, tea or even Coca-Cola color. Administer your hypertensive, anti-hypertensive, diuretics. We're going to weigh them, and we're going to do a neuro eval, because this can lead to the encephalitis and seizures. No strenuous activity until the protein resolves. So, you know, like no jogging, no weightlifting, that kind of thing. Renal failure, the kidneys can't concentrate the urine in renal failure. They can't conserve electrolytes or excrete waste. So they've just completely shut down and quit doing their job, right? So it can be acute or chronic. In progressive cases, it is considered end-stage renal disease. ARF, acute renal failure. It is a sudden irreversible decline in renal function that results in accumulated waste, metabolic toxins are what we're talking about here in the blood, and it creates fluid and electrolyte imbalances. Hyperkalemia is common. We treat the underlying cause, manage the fluid and electrolytes, and manage the hypertension. Ask if they've had any kind of recent shock, trauma, burns, urologic abnormalities, or have an underlying renal disease, or if they've had any kind of medication exposure that might have been nephrotoxic, or any kind of severe blood transfusion reaction in the past. Hyperkalemia makes you feel very weak, and you have irregular pulses and abdominal cramping. Hypocalcemia causes muscle twitching or tetany, and tetany is just big muscle twitches, okay, where they're really crampy, grabby. The renal transplant is required for end-stage renal disease. Our concern then would be rejection. The transplant itself does improve growth and cognitive function. The rejection symptoms are listed there. Post-surgery, you're going to maintain fluids and electrolytes. And in this case, we cluster care. Everybody always wants to pick that answer on the test. Because why are we going to cluster care? They're immunocompromised, right? So we're going to go in that room as little as possible. So when we get ready to go in, we're going to say, okay, we're taking the 9 o'clock meds. We're going to do the bed change. We're going to do this, that, and the other. And we go in and we sweep in and we get it all done at one time. So female reproductive issues, the labial adhesion can be partial or complete. It causes a urinary stasis, which leads to UTI, pyelonephritis, scarring, hypertension later in life may require replacement. So it's always important to check. And the reason it adheres is because they lack the hormones to keep it open. So doing a diaper change, you would think it would be an automatic, but parents don't always know exactly what it's supposed to look like, and they don't know to report that. So you do inspect the genitalia for fusion. It requires topical estrogen, and then you would use petroleum jelly for a couple months just to keep it open. And vulvovaginitis is really just an inflammation and pain. It usually comes from an overgrowth of either bacteria or yeast. It can be from chemical factors, which basically is, you know, sprays or perfumes or, you know, that kind of thing used down there. Or it can be from poor hygiene. It causes itching and burning in the perineal area. We do want to teach front to back wiping, cotton underwear, avoid the bubble baths, urinate after intercourse. Male reproductive disorders, and we're talking about in uncircumcised males, they may have phimosis or paraphimosis. This deals with the foreskin and does it completely retract or not. And once you have retracted it back to inspect the glands, you have to bring the skin back down across the glands to keep it from getting trapped. That is paraphimosis. Parents don't know. It doesn't retract automatically when they're first born. It's tighter. If you do have to treat it, you're going to use topical steroid cream to loosen the foreskin. It takes about a month. Here is circumcision. And this is now recommended by the AAP, the American Academy of Pediatrics. And it is being paid for on Medicaid or minimal expensive. It decreases the chances to develop a urinary tract infection, an STI, AIDS, penile cancer, and it reduces the chance of passing along cervical cancer to the female partners. Appropriate pain management is necessary. And y'all, it's so cruel when you see a baby being circumcised. They just really don't hardly do anything. You give them a sucrose pasty, which helps a little bit. And then we need to teach the parents how to clean it afterwards and what the signs and symptoms are of infection. And then they have to void after the procedure within 6 to 8 hours, or we have to get them back in. Cryptocortisome is an undescended testes, and this is very common. It's your job to check, so don't be hesitant to do so. It could be one or both. It usually will descend on its own, but if it does not, we do surgical repair about age 2. Sometimes they'll wait to 8 if it's pretty low. Sometimes it'll but be all the way up in the fat pad, and you have to move those down a little bit sooner. The risk of prematurity in firstborn, if they were born by C-section, what in the heck difference does that make? I don't know, but that's what it says. If they had a low birth weight or if they have hypophosphatemia, it's all connected. Hydrocele and variceal, or varicocele. The hydrocele is just where there's a leak from the peritoneum into the scrotum, and you'll see what seems to be inordinately large testicles. And if you stand that baby up or child, you can actually see the scrotum fill. And that's just fluids from the peritoneum that's moving its way down there. It usually resolves in a year. It's no big deal at all. The varicocele, think of the bag of worms again, like we did previously. The testicles will have either palpable veins or a bluish coloration. On both of these, we do what's called watchful waiting. Are y'all familiar with that term, watchful waiting? We know it's there. We're going to just continue to monitor for the time being. Oh, testicular torsion. Basically, this is the testicles hanging from their blood supply, and somehow, it usually happens to athletes, that has gotten twisted, and it's always going to be just one side. But when it does, when that twists, this blood supply has suddenly been choked off. Just picture, you know, twisting something off like that. So the blood supply to the testicle is gone. That testicle immediately starts knowing it, and it sends a signal, I'm in pain, I'm in pain, there's something wrong. And so if you pick up on the scrotum, the pain is immediately gone. You let it back down, it comes back immediately. This is a surgical emergency. It has to be treated within the first 24 hours if it does die. I mean, or it will die. If it does die, here's the good news. The other testicle takes over the space, and it also takes over the job. All you need is one, but you have to have one. It also means that they can't play contact sports. Did I miss anything on that slide? Okay, epididymitis, it's the most common cause for pain in the scrotum. It is caused by bacteria. It just requires an antibiotic. Thank you, Lord, right? If they are sexually active, you have to consider whether or not it's an STD that's causing it. We will assess the inguinal area for enlarged lymph nodes. This is rest, ice, elevate, NSAIDs, and an antibiotic. Oh, and we are done. Okay. So good deal. Let me stop sharing the screen. Let me see if this gets me back. Is that me? All right, so we do have a couple of announcements. If y'all give me just one more minute. Everybody chill. If you do not have insurance, you need to email Ms. Hill. There is a course meeting at 2 o'clock today for the course reps. Who are my course reps? Anybody know? Whoever volunteered has forgotten that they volunteered. So I know we've got one.